Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, bright and breezy on a Saturday morning, coming to you from Tennis Podcast Towers, Richmond. Casa Matt Roberts. Hello, Matt.
Hello. And I've just seen, actually, that you sent me a WhatsApp, which I missed, which was, where is the door?
Because it's not obvious.
Not in the place you would expect it to be.
Yeah, if anyone's trying to stalk Matt Roberts... you'll struggle because it's very unclear how you get into his building. But anyway, I'm here. Billie Jean is here. She knows what's what in a podcast recording. She's got that look of resignation about her.
When you say make yourself at home to people coming into your flat, Billie Jean's very much done that.
That's her vibe, yeah. David Law is not here. He's still swanning round Croatia. But frankly, who needs David Law when you've got the star of the Wimbledon History Conference?
Is that me?
That's you. That is you, Matt.
Mm. Yes, well, I played a small part yesterday in the Wimbledon History Conference, and it was great, actually, and particularly so because there were so many lovely tennis podcast fans there. And I'd like to thank all of them for coming. I'd like to thank Robert McNichol, the Wimbledon historian who put it on. And yeah, it was a really interesting event. I was there to talk about Tennis Relived and a little bit on the GOAT debate as well.
Sigh.
A bit of a sigh, yeah. But there were lots of interesting talks. The language used to describe Indian tennis players, how tennis and politics intersect, and people who say that you can keep them separate, that's kind of a nonsense. I sort of punched the air at that one. There were a couple of representatives from the Arthur Ashe Legacy Project talking about their oral history project they're doing. Yeah, just lots of really interesting talks. I felt a little bit out of my depth next to all the people with PhD in their name. But then I told a story about Fred Perry, which for those who've heard that episode of Tennis Relived, I sort of told the story about how he was an outcast and he wasn't necessarily who the All England Club would have chosen to be their champion because of his social background. And I felt a little bit nervous telling that story at the All England Club. But then one of the other speakers slagged off how hard it is to get tickets for Wimbledon. And suddenly I felt, oh, well, I'm fine.
All bets are off.
Yeah.
Were you the only speaker to bring groupies?
Yes. Well, I didn't bring them. They were there.
They were encouraged to come.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, it was so lovely seeing so many of you show up and literally cheer Matt on.
Yeah, people whooped.
First ever
whoop at an
detected whooping at a conference. Yeah, no, it was lovely. Matt was, of course, the star of the show, and to everybody that came, I'm quite sure you had a good time. But thank you for supporting the pod.
Thank you.
And thank you, Matt, for representing the pod so brilliantly. We're at that stage. It is November, which means podcasts start coming to you thick and
it's
fast.
True, isn't it? I've just looked at our schedule.
Yeah, there are some two podcast days approaching. Matt flies to Seville tomorrow for the Billie Jean King Cup finals. We'll be doing daily pods from there. I'm flying to Turin on Friday for the ATP finals. There's, of course, the Davis Cup finals in Malaga, where Matt will be present as well. And, of course, we still have the culmination of the 2023 WTA Tour, the finals in Cancun. And that is what we're here to talk about today. This is our end of group stage, looking ahead to semifinals and finals podcast. And there is a lot to talk about. For any of you that heard our kind of preview show with Pam Shriver at the start of the week, kind of preview recorded with a day's play under our belt, there was a lot to talk about there. And I'm not sure any of those talking points have really died down over the course of the last 5 days. If anything, those fires have been very much stoked and new ones lit. The singles has successfully reached the semi-final stage as scheduled, and the semi-finals will be Iga Świątek, undefeated in the tournament so far, against Arina Sabalenka, a battle for the world number one year-end spot, which is exactly what we want from this event. And the other semi-final will be Jessica Pegula against Coco Gauff, doubles partners turned rivals in singles. And on the subject of the doubles, they are in a tough spot, are Pegula and Gauff, because due to weather, spoiler alert, weather is going to come up a lot, the group stages of the doubles are not yet completed. So today, Saturday, Pegula and Gauff will not only have to play singles against one another, they will also have to come back after that to resume their final group stage doubles match against Laura Siegmund and Vera Zvonareva. That's suspended at 1-1 in the second set, Pegula and Gauff having won the first. And then if they win that, they'll obviously have to play more doubles. And one of them will win the singles. And we'll also have to play more singles.
Scheduler's nightmare, Pegula and Gauff.
Absolute nightmare. And look, they know playing singles and doubles at any event comes with its challenges, particularly an outdoor event where rain is a thing. But this is extreme, even for them, isn't it?
It is. And I think particularly because of the point you make about how they're then, you know, they're having to play each other in what's a really big match. You know, this would certainly be the biggest title of Jessica Pegula's career so far, if she can win this tournament. And it would cap just the most incredible second half of the season for Coco Gauff. You know, there's a lot on the line for them in that singles match, and then having to then come together and play doubles. Look, I totally think that they will handle it, but it's awkward. And I did see Jessica Pegula say this week, I believe on one of her visits to the Tennis Channel desk, that they think they're going to wind back the doubles next year. I think they're very much targeting up to the Olympics.
She kind of said, then we'll look at it.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was kind of the vibe I got from her at the US Open as well. Like, I think they're all in on the Olympics, and great. I'm absolutely here for that. But there's no doubt about it that, you know, as successful as they've both been in singles, you can't really know how truly successful you can be unless you go all in on it. And it does feel, particularly for Pegula, like the doubles sometimes has, I don't want to say got in the way of the singles, because she's just had these brilliant singles results, but it feel like she's just played so much tennis. I think over 100 matches she's played this year between the two. And it can take its toll. And yeah, I think that sounds like a really smart move to keep coming into the doubles, play the Olympics, and then maybe reassess.
She's undefeated, just like Świątek in the singles is Jessica Pegula. She's played, Świątek aside, I think the most impressive tennis so far, kind of the cleanest tennis so far in some extremely dirty conditions. I mean, I don't know why I'm about to make a prediction in a podcast that will be so soon out of date, but I see Jessica Pegula as the very heavy favorite in that semi-final for a few reasons. I mean, Gauff, incredible hustle for her to reach this semi-final. She has not played well. She has not looked like she's enjoying herself at all, and I understand that, quite frankly. And the second is memories of their most recent meeting in Canada, which was an incredibly strange match. It was three sets and sort of on the face of it looked competitive, but it was the only match that Coco Gauff lost all summer. That match, she won Washington, she won Toronto, Cincinnati, and of course went on to win the US Open. And she looked just really uncomfortable with the whole playing my friend and doubles partner dynamic. I know that's not their only meeting on tour, but I remember having the feeling all the way through that match, and it was played in quite a lot of wind, as I recall. I had the feeling all the way through, Pegula's got this. And I have that feeling in my stomach ahead of this one.
Yeah, I agree. I would say up until last night, where I'm sure we'll talk about Iga Świątek, and she impressed me massively last night. Up until then, Pegula had been the player who most impressed me.
What time was that match happening, Matt?
Time, I've got a very hectic schedule at the moment, and for some reason I was sacrificing sleep to watch Iga Świątek.
I'm struggling with a 9 a.m. podcast recording. I arrived and I said, I'm here, I'm on time, coffees are on the way, but I have not had the chance to watch highlights of the matches that took place in the middle of the night. Matt's like, oh, don't worry, I watched them live.
I think it's because I was very aware that I hadn't seen any tennis yesterday. I thought, I need to have something to bring to this podcast in the morning. I'm awake, I'll put it on. But up until then, Pegula had been the player who had most impressed me. I think the thing about Pegula is we think of her as having this ceiling to her game. And really, I think the way now to frame it for Pegula is simply that she just has this Grand Slam quarterfinal block, because she has shown that she can beat the best players in the world. It's not a situation where her game just can't beat the best players. She's won her last six matches against the top 10. Four of those in straight sets, including all of them this week. And in that run of six, she's beaten Gauff, Świątek, Rybakina, Sakkari, Sabalenka. You know, these are the best players in the world, and she's been beating them. And I think the point that you and Pam both made on Monday's podcast has definitely sort of rung true this week about just how steady mentally she's been amidst all the chaos going on around her with this tournament. And she's just really just got on with her business in a really effective way. Her serve's been good. She's been breaking serve easily. I think she's underrated as a player in terms of her skill set. You know, she's obviously a great ball striker and hits the ball deceptively hard, I think. But she's also got good hands and quite a nice slice backhand. And she can anticipate the play really well and get a lot of balls back. All important things to have in the wind, I think. And that's really come through. It's very compact. There's not a lot that can go wrong with her game. Whereas on the flip side...
Yeah. Such a contrast, isn't it?
With Coco Gauff, you know, there is still quite a lot that can go wrong with that game. And she has been the embodiment this week of everything that's been brilliant about her through this second half of the season, finding ways to win when she's not necessarily playing at her best. She is so match tough right now, having won 24 of her last 27 matches. But the game is not in a particularly good place. You know, I think 17 double faults yesterday against Vondroušová. There was a whole game of double faults against Iga Świątek. The forehand has been misfiring, and it's just a huge credit to her, really, that she's managed to get through that group without anything close to her best tennis. And there's also this story going on that I think Lindsay Davenport was the one to break the news that no longer working with Pere Riba. Gauff said that wasn't her decision. Brad Gilbert is there, Jameer Jenkins as well. So, you know, she's still got quite a team. But I was really thinking that Pere Riba would be the week-to-week guy and Brad Gilbert would come in for the big events and give his knowledge to her. But really, I felt like Pere Riba was the main coach there. So for him to have gone, I don't know, it certainly changes the dynamic of that team. And it feels like quite a big story, especially if it's not Coco Gauff's decision.
Yeah, really interesting. Well, it's not any surprise to me that that band that that won the summer was a kind of summer fling.
Yeah, wasn't sustainable.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. It really surprises me that Pereira is the one to is the Jerry Halliwell of the gang. that really, really surprised me. I'm sure in time the reasons will become clear. I'm sure you can speculate about, you know, Brad Gilbert was the one getting all of the spotlight and all of the plaudits over the summer, and particularly at the US Open. There's definitely a scenario in which that was uncomfortable and annoying for him. I don't know anything about his character and what kind of guy he is. He might be somebody that's perfectly happy being the silent partner. I honestly don't know. But it's easy to forget that Pereira, it's not like Pereira was there all along and Brad Gilbert came in as the jolt. Pereira only came in just before Brad Gilbert, didn't he? They both jolted together.
Yeah.
It was a chemistry of the whole thing. So I do think that's quite a significant departure. And yet I still think I think she's absolutely maxing out on her capability in these conditions, Coco Gauff, by reaching the semifinals. I'm so impressed, because honestly, she looks like she's on the verge of tears 90% of the time. And as somebody that can't play in the wind...
I've cancelled tennis because it's too windy.
And I know, look, I've seen it on Twitter, and I know a lot of people listening that perhaps haven't seen that much of the actual tennis in Cancun, and that's understandable. A lot of it's on at times in various places in the world that aren't that convenient. Just thinking, it's wind, get on with it. You know, you can't be guaranteed perfect conditions as a tennis player, and sometimes a bit of wind can make things easier, you know. Ooh, who's going to deal with this better? And sometimes I quite enjoy watching that. It can sort the wheat from the chaff, wind, and it can be a sort of an interesting curveball in a match situation. I've not felt that at a single point during this week so far, with my not oft-worn meteorologist cap on. There is something about this wind that is completely destructive to tennis quality. It is an absolutely horrible wind. It's the tail end of storm season, isn't it, in Cancun? So although I think they've potentially been unlucky, it's not totally unforeseeable that this weather would be happening. There's been a lot of intermittent rain as well. I mean, Gauff Ondrejcova last night was interrupted goodness knows how many times. And we've had, you know, Sabalenka Rybakina was held over from the day before. We'll come on to talk about that in a minute. But there are these positioned behind the umpire's chair, positioned at the net level on the court, on either side, are a set of plants. Lovely, attractive greenery. Lovely idea. But the function they are serving throughout this week in Cancun is to be a windometer. I'm sure there's an actual word for a windometer that's not windometer, but that's what they're doing, right? And they are so accurate in portraying the exact horrific, what word would Serena use? Abhorrent.
Yeah, she would say the conditions were abhorrent,
right? Yes, because
and then she'd go back.
It's like Lynx golf on a bad day, isn't it? It is swirly and gusty and hideous. You can't play good tennis in it. I think Świątek and Pegula have come the closest. That compact game from Pegula is really helping in her sort of mental stasis. Has been so impressive, but it's basically impossible to play good quality tennis. The players are doing their best. I don't see this as coddled tennis players whinging about imperfection. I see this as tennis players annoyed in a very relatable way at how hard it is to play good tennis, but also tennis players with an awareness that this is the showpiece event of the WTA Tour. Players, perhaps for once with an awareness of their responsibility to represent their sport and represent women's sport full stop, and their frustration at their inability to do that effectively, to show off themselves and their sport the way it deserves to be.
Yeah, well said. There have been times this week where I've found myself longing for Fort Worth, and I really didn't think that I would ever be longing for Fort Worth, because that was not great. But at least there was controlled conditions, and there wasn't these incredible gusts of wind that, as you said, make the sport almost impossible to play. And I think the women are hyper aware of the misogyny out there that will criticize them even when they're playing well and delivering their best. And now they're in a situation where that is simply impossible for them to be able to do that because of the conditions that this tournament is being played in. And it looks bad. It is not a good watch. And that is absolutely not the players' fault whatsoever, but they're the ones that will get the grief because they're the ones playing. And I just feel really sorry for them. They have been let down, these top players, quite simply. And as we said on Monday's pod, they've been let down several years in a row now. And if the players speaking up about it is one of the ways that we can make sure that something like this doesn't happen again, then I'm very pleased that the players are speaking up.
Yeah, honestly, I've been a bit bemused by some of the negative reaction to the players speaking up about this issue, some sort of bristling at them speaking out publicly against their own governing body. And I don't understand. I honestly don't understand that response, quite frankly. You know, platform and profile is what these players have. It's their power. They are wielding their power for good. I wish they would do it more often. I wish they would show signs of an awareness of that responsibility and torch that they carry, and, you know, I guess in some ways are burdened with more often. But it's an underutilized tool, but I'm so pleased to see them using it in this situation. You know, I think back to the French Open and the so obvious misogyny of the scheduling there 2 years in a row, and the bemusement of ourselves and other like-minded journalists. I'm thinking back to Matt Futterman at the New York Times and The Athletic, and, you know, persistently having to put the question to players in press conferences. I remember a conversation with him where I was like, this is wrong no matter what the players think about it. Yeah. This is just wrong. And whether the players have enough awareness of the situation to realise that, despite all of their understandable internalised misogyny, or whether they have the inclination to speak out about it, it's wrong. And he said, yeah, but the story doesn't stand up without quotes from players. That's where the power is, in the profile and the platform of the players. It makes more noise. Change is more likely to happen if players speak out. That is a fact. I'm not saying there isn't a place for quiet diplomacy. And, you know, again, if Matt Futterman's story from this week in The Athletic, take a look at that for an indication of the attempts at quiet diplomacy that have been happening behind the scenes over the last few weeks, and doesn't feel like it's got them anywhere. This is kind of end of their tether situation. So, yeah, I've been a bit bemused by those responses, quite frankly.
Yeah, same. And I think, I guess one of my frustrations is I am absolutely pleased that they're speaking out, but I think the reason they didn't speak out at the French Open is because quietly none of them wanted to play the night sessions. You know, whereas now they're speaking out because it affects them.
Because they're the wider interests of the sport and the interests of the individual player are for once aligned.
Yes.
It's kind of an easy win. It's easier than speaking out about China or about Saudi Arabia or about Wimbledon bans.
Yes.
That's more complicated.
Or even something like the scheduling at the French Open, because they would have to say, I don't want to play there, but I know it's right for us to be scheduled there. Whereas now, as you said, it's aligned. It's totally wrong and it's bad for me. So it is easier to speak out. But that doesn't mean that I'm criticising them for speaking out. I'm pleased that they are. I just wish, as you said, they would do it more often.
Mm. And yet, as we're discussing this and shining such a light on the issues of the event, and look, I don't want to hammer the event either. I don't want to hammer the WTA. We're doing this from a place of sadness that we desperately want this event to be a beacon showpiece of the sport that we know is so brilliant, and it's sad to see it not able to be that. But equally, I have this deep anxiety in the pit of my stomach that by criticizing the event this year, it's playing into the hands of the wider strategic plans that tennis has to go all in on Saudi Arabia. It'll be here are your questions about everything that was wrong with this year. Saudi Arabia has the answers.
Oh, you want more money?
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Oh, you want nice conditions? Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a worry. It's a worry.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
On to the other side of things and the semi-final that has been set up between current world number one and former world number one, potentially, almost certainly, if not today, then at some point soon, future world number one, Iga Świątek. This is the match that we wanted. I am about to check the weather forecast in Cancun to see what the chances are of this ending up being the match that we all know it has the potential to be. Świątek's played the best tennis so far of the two of them. That much is certain.
For sure. And I will now refer to the match that I was watching in the middle of the night because I thought she was brilliant last night, Iga Świątek. In those windy conditions, so much control on her shots and such sharp footwork. That was what I really noticed. I think you have to have that in those windy conditions. And she just looked controlled and focused. And I think there have been times this week where Sabalenka has looked a little bit out of control. And I think that combination with difficult conditions will make it tough for her. But I'm just so pleased that we've got this match, and I think Iga Swiatek wanted this match. The way she played against Ons Jabeur last night, I think I'm right in saying that there was a scenario where she could have gone through the group but ended up not playing Sabalenka in the semi-final, and that would have left the destiny of number one out of her control. Because I think if Sabalenka had then got through to the final, it wouldn't have mattered what Iga Swiatek had done. Sabalenka would have been number one. But as it is, Swiatek needs to beat Sabalenka and then go on to win the tournament. So she knows that she's got it in her hands to finish the year as number one. It's also in Sabalenka's hands. You know, if she beats Iga Swiatek, she will be number one, regardless of whether she wins the tournament or not. But it's exactly what you want. And as poor as some of the tennis has been sometimes because of the conditions, because of everything we've just spoken about, I think narrative-wise, we've got exactly what we would have wanted from this. You know, this is a brilliant showpiece moment for the WTA to have, you know, the number one on the line at the end of the year. And I think if Swiatek ends up finishing the year as number one, it will almost feel like this little period where she was number two, it'll almost be like it didn't really happen, and yet it was sort of the most important thing for Swiatek that it did happen, because I think she's really got better as a player in the last couple of months because
it's been good for her.
It has been good for her, I think. And you know, for Sabalenka, this is now, I read that she is the first woman in 17 years to reach the semis at all four slams and the WTA finals in the same season, which is an incredible feat of consistency. Justine Henin was the last player to do that 17 years ago. And I just think it's so interesting how Sabalenka's become this player who is really consistent at the big events, but is struggling to win some of the big matches. And obviously, apart from the Australian Open, of course, but we've now got a situation where this is a big match. Can she win it? You know, it's a bit like a Grand Slam semi-final. It's the semi-final of the WTA finals, number one on the line. What Sabalenka is going to show up? And I'm just a bit worried that in windy conditions, it's going to be tough for her. I think her ball is just the less frightening prospect in the wind for Swiatek to have to deal with. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see if Sabalenka can sort of prove everyone wrong there.
Sabalenka's so funny in the wind. I found that the resumption of her match against Rybakina last night quite amusing, really, because you know, most players, when they play in the wind and they talk about it afterwards, it's all about adjustments, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. All about, you know, the little adjustments. Sabalenka's policy is pretend it's not happening. I mean, that's her policy the whole time.
For everything.
I am doing my thing. Mm. Come at me, wind, opposition, whatever. I'll just be over here belting the ball. and just her commitment to that, regardless of the hoo-ha that is happening around her. And honestly, that those conditions last night really were hoo-ha. I found very entertaining. She was the better player against Rybakina, who kind of on the face of it had her chances. And look, she's still competitive with the best in the world. I don't think it's crisis mode for her. But she's not the player she was at the start of the year. I don't think she's been quite the same player since the virus that took her out of the French Open, whether it's coincidence that timing aligned or whether there's some kind of lingering effect of the virus, she doesn't look as powerful. She looks just sort of a slightly anemic version of herself. The serve is a problem. The serve being less of a weapon is a problem. I look forward to getting down to Australia and being able to ask her about that kink in the service motion and whether she's adopted that because of something to do with the shoulder. From what I can see, the speeds are still up there, but it's just become more erratic, the serve. It's just, she used to be able to go full throttle on it and it be reliable, and that feels like it's gone. It's more of a heart-in-mouth moment when the when she tosses the ball.
Mm. And I think a little bit less effective as well, but certainly based on what Pam was saying on Monday, how even when she's finding that first serve, she's not necessarily winning quite so many points behind it. And that's, look, she's got a great all-round game, Rybakina, but the serve is the foundation. It's the pillar. She needs that. And there's been a worrying decline in that shot over the second half of the season, for sure.
You picked Sabalenka at the start of the week, is that right?
No, on Monday's pod, I picked Świątek. Yeah. And in the newsletter, because Świątek had already gone, I picked
to
Coco
me?
Gauff.
You picked Coco Gauff.
I need points, Catherine.
We can't spoiler this, can we? But I've been genuinely not looking because David's had such a good run. Is David in an unassailable lead?
I wouldn't say it's unassailable, but you might need to pick and hope that Finland win the Davis Cup or something like that.
Hail Mary situation. Yep. Okay. I feel good about Świątek at this stage. Pegula is Świątek or Pegula for me. They've been so, so much more convincing than the rest of the field.
It's definitely going to be a Sabalenka Gauff final now, isn't it? But how can it be? I'm so sure it has to be Świątek Pegula because of what we've seen.
One scenario that I definitely can see, I was talking about this with the friend of the pod, American Andrew, the other day, who's obviously a big Pegula guy, being a Bills fan, like your good self, Matt, is Pegula wins the WTA finals. I get seduced by it. And despite swearing never to do so again at the US Open, pick her to win the Australian Open because tennis podcast predictions, and she obviously loses in the quarterfinals again.
Yeah, and I would also throw in the United Cup there because...
Yes, has a great United
Cup. She was very convincing there this season. Yeah. Going to back up amazing WTA finals. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's going to happen.
I see that scenario. It's funny, when I watched Sabalenka Świątek in the final of Madrid this year, and that was one of those just sort of preordained matches. They were on a collision course all week. They both desperately wanted to play one another. It was a real kind of great, they want this rivalry to happen as much as we want it to happen moment. I thought we'd be watching that match all year from that point on. It hasn't happened since. A bit like, you know, Świątek, a bit like all of those, they have been circling one another a bit. It's Gauff always plays Świątek.
Always.
It's like Dominor Murray. But then some of the other rivalries at the top, they've been kind of circling one another for a lot of the year. So I'm really pumped for that. I do wish I hadn't just checked the weather forecast in Cancun.
Hit me.
According to the UK Met Office, a 60% chance of rain between the hours of 12 and 6 p.m. Solidly.
Okay, that's around... So the first doubles would definitely be in that window and probably the first singles as well.
Yeah.
Great.
And then it drops off to a mere 40% chance of rain.
And so, anything on the windy levels?
Ooh, excellent question. Bear with me here. Bear with me. The Met Office isn't doing wind, but I'm going to AccuWeather. Right, wind gusts. No, this is, well, current. Current wind gusts are at 52 kilometres per hour.
Oh, my God.
That's quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that a lot?
That's a lot.
Let's go hourly. Right. Da, 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 da. Okay.
I'm cancelling tennis if it's 52 kilometre per hour winds.
Right. Okay. So what time does play start local time?
I think it's around 3 or 4, right?
Okay. So at 3 p.m., 27 degrees, cloudy. And a windy of 24 kilometres per hour.
Much better.
Yeah, okay.
That's fine.
Okay, and that's holding pretty pretty consistently throughout the evening, wishing, hoping, praying that is the case. Mm. Just last thing that probably deserves a mention: Ondra Burr, who hasn't made it through to the semi-final stage, extremely emotional week for her. She did score one victory, revenge. She just loves revenge, doesn't she, Ondra Burr? She's a revenge gal. Revenge for the Wimbledon final. A 4-3 win over Marketa Vondroušová. She was very, very emotional after the match, fighting back tears. And she talked about the ongoing conflict in Gaza, which she's been speaking out about on her social media as well. She said, "I'm very happy with the win, but I haven't been very happy lately. The situation in the world doesn't make me happy. So I feel like I'm sorry. It's very tough seeing children and babies dying every day. It's heartbreaking. I've decided to donate part of my prize money to help the Palestinians. I can't be happy with this win. It's not a political message. It's humanity. I want peace in this world. That's it." So yeah, not much to add to that, but I think worthy of a mention. And that's season over for Ondra Burr. Interesting to see how she deals with all of it. She's got a lot to process at the end of this season, and fascinating to see how she comes back at the start of 2024. There's obviously been stuff happening in Paris this week, which we aren't ignoring, folks. This is just a WTA Finals specific pod. We'll be back on Monday. We'll be back how many times on Monday, Matt?
I think you're going to be back twice.
Right. Am I the only?
Well, I think David as well. I think Monday. I'm just doing pod two on Monday, right. Unless I fancy pod one.
Right. I'll be back twice on Monday, folks. So don't worry, we will be wrapping up all things Paris, where Runa Djokovic has been happening with Agro.
Yes.
In fact, all sorts of things have been happening. I mean, Paris has had its own problems.
Yes, there would definitely be a segue, wouldn't there, from problems in Cancun to problems in Paris. I think they've had... I think Stu Fraser reported there's been one pre-midnight finish in Paris, and there's been a couple of 2 a.m. something finishes. I mean, ridiculous.
And it happens every year. Again, this isn't a hindsight is a wonderful thing, and, oh, you know, the matches just went long. This happens.
Yeah.
This is tennis.
This is what happens when you try and schedule 6 matches on one court in the same day. Like, minimum... You're looking at 12 hours minimum. And it's only two
sessions as well, isn't it?
So they have to get a crowd out and
you
in.
You can't move matches. Yeah.
And it's just been ridiculous. Yeah. I think it's been very possible to be living on the East Coast of America and wake up and Paris be happening and go to bed at a perfectly reasonable time and Paris is still happening. It's insane.
And Andrei Rublev had things to say about it last night, didn't he?
If you've lost Andrei Rublev,
yeah, exactly.
You've lost ATP.
Exactly, and I'm looking forward to everybody on the internet having a go at Andrei Rublev for speaking out against his governing body. He did it in a very sort of sweet Andrei Rublev way, with a sort of little sort of smirk on his face of "Am I really doing this? Am I really saying something bad about someone?" But it was sort of, yeah, thanks ATP. This week has been ridiculous.
And again, that's been a tremendous shame because there have been so many good matches in Paris.
Absolutely, you know, there have.
Much drama and, you know, match points being saved and interesting stuff for the race to Turin. You know, it's been, tennis-wise, it's been a really good week. It's just been overshadowed by the fact that so much of it's been happening in the middle of the night, and it's just ridiculous. And Jannik Sinner had to pull out of the event because of it.
With fatigue. Real statement, that.
We're not talking Paris.
No, we're not talking... Well, look, that's just a little teaser for Monday's pod, which... Well, you won't be on the Paris one, so if you've got anything else you need to get off your chest about Paris, speak now.
No, I will... I will leave it to you and David. David all fired up after his holiday. And
I don't know. He looks very relaxed.
He does, but I think he's going to have takes.
Okay. His takes last night were that he had forgotten the WTA finals were a round robin. So,
oh my God.
That's the kind of holiday mode that David was in, which we support wholeheartedly.
And actually, you have brought me on to round robin, and I have been reminded. I think generally, round robin is part of the reason why often the WTA finals and the ATP finals, we had a lot of ATP finals with extremely one-sided matches. It just always feels a little bit weird to me. You know, if you're struggling in a match, normally you're fighting absolute tooth and nail to come back. But if it's round robin and you've got another chance, I do think that's part of the reason why we see some one-sided matches, because in theory you shouldn't. It's all the best players in the world. They should be closely competitive. But I don't know, a lot of the matches have this slightly weird feeling where you're worried about it getting awkward. And I do think the round robin sort of plays into that a little bit. Sorry, round robin rant.
And we welcome it here. Any other rants about any tennis to get off your chest before you enter Billie Jean King Cup mode? Just on that, and again, this is probably for Monday's second podcast. Belinda Bencic is pregnant. We had that announcement yesterday, and
yes, I did see that
she's going to play the Billie Jean King Cup.
Is she
still? I believe so, which is quite something, really. I know we've had players play pregnant before. I mean, Serena Williams won the Australian Open pregnant, but I'm not sure it's ever happened where we've known.
Wow.
About it. Yeah.
Wow.
I find that really a really interesting one. So again, another teaser for one of Monday's podcasts. So do join us for that. We'll be wrapping up the WTA finals, wrapping up Paris, looking ahead to the Billie Jean King Cup finals. It is coming at you thick and fast in the month of November, folks. Buckle up. We have our mascots. We don't have an episode mascot today, but don't worry. As discussed, there are plenty of slots still available for our remaining mascots. We have our mascots, though. I have got Xenia, David's got Maisie, and Matt has Darwin. Billie Jean has been remarkably compliant.
Looks like she's already had a walk, but I know she's about to go for her walk.
She's not used to getting up this early, Matt.
Fair.
It was a startling alarm call for her, for us both, quite frankly. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have top folks and executive producers on three. 3, 2, 1.
Jamie, Hannah, and Drew.
And we have shout outs?
We don't today.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well rehearsed. Matt's got places to go and people to see.
Yes, and I know we'll get emails because people like it when it's all of us doing the shout outs.
True. Yeah. What is a shout out without David Law?
Exactly.
Although my dad was very happy with his Pam Shriver shout out.
I felt like Pam was, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to say adequate replacement for David because that sounds terrible. Pam's way better than that, but in shout-out terms, an adequate replacement.
We understand the sentiment. That is Billie Jean making her presence heard, just to confirm that she has been here throughout the recording. Thank you, Billie Jean. Thank you for listening. We'll be back on Monday twice. So we'll speak to you then.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.